How do you guys listen to podcasts?
I don't know. How do you listen to podcasts? Three toes?
I do it all analog. It's on records.
Really?
145 at 145.
Look at that. Well, there's lots of options out there, but today we're going to be talking about a pretty special one to me, and that one is called Stitcher Premium.
Okay.
So a lot of times when you listen to a podcast, they will go in and they'll give you an ad on something. I don't know if it's like a sofa mattress or stamps.com, et cetera, et cetera. And you can just kind of tell they're just going through the motions. In this case, legit, we are advertising for something that I believe in and I've been a subscriber of for probably a year now. It's Stitcher Premium, and I absolutely love the service. Originally, I was like, what the hell am I going to pay for podcasting for? But yeah, it turns out this particular company, this particular group, has access to an insane amount of podcast material. I originally pulled the trigger because one of my favorite all-time podcasts, which is called Super Ego,
yeah,
went over there. Their entire back catalog, it's sort of this riffed comedy bits, very original, very creative, very funny. And then when it went there, I was like, well, I need it. And so I got the service. What I found was it's paid for itself back beyond that in how much stuff it has. And the one specific thing I'd like to call out is they have tens, I would say hundreds, but probably hundreds of comedy albums. So as a person who does a lot of commuting, I'm always looking for something new and something interesting to listen to. The comedy albums that they have are phenomenal. And
I had no idea they were on there.
Huge amounts. And it's the type of stuff that I would actually pay for normally, yeah, if I like a particular comedian. A classic one that we've talked about before, Kyle Kinane, his back catalog's, yeah, on there.
Nice.
So for me, it originally seemed weird because so much of what we get from podcasting is free. But Stitcher Premium just opens the doors, and it opens the doors even further into back catalogs for podcasts that you can only currently get kind of modern like episodes of. I have not wavered in my allegiance to them. They're great.
Cool. You know what? So you talked to me about it, and I signed up last week just because I can watch ad-free versions of podcasts I already listened to, like Conan,
yep,
O'Brien Needs a Friend, which is an amazing podcast. My Favorite Murder, that Wolverine, The Lost Trail is on there. You don't got to listen to ads. It's amazing.
And that's what I wanted to try because they also have original material, and that's like an original scripted show, which that's one I've been meaning to check out. So I'll hit that one soon.
Nice. Yeah.
But how much does it cost, you might ask? So for only $4.99 a month, or the cost of a beef quesarito from Taco Bell, or for $34.99 a year. Pretty cheap, but it seems like you get a pretty good selection of options there.
Yeah.
So if you guys do want to go and sign up, go to stitcher.com/premium to sign up today.
It's forward slash.
Is it? Fuck you in the forward backslash. Not you. I just can never tell the difference. Go to stitcher.com/premium to sign up today and use promo code Asteroid Factory for 1 month free on your monthly plan. Booyah!
That's do perfect. It.
Do it.
Go to stitcher.com/premium to sign up today and use promo code Asteroid Factory for 1 month free on your monthly plan.
Hello, my name is Imogen Greengrass, and I want to let you know that I'm going to be placing a call with the local authorities because I found my son playing his rock and roll records backwards, and it had satanic messages. Well, just listen.
Asteroid Factory, devil of the devil of the devil.
Hey there, guys and gals. Welcome to another episode of the Asteroid Factory podcast. We're your host, James Von Doom.
I'm Chewy.
I'm yours, Vincent. I never met. My name's Pitt. Your ass ain't talking your way out of
this. That probably didn't pick up at all. Yeah. My name's Pitt. You ain't talking your way out of the shit.
I'm sorry, now. But Imogen Greengrass?
Sounds familiar.
Welcome. I hope her son's name is Bobby Boucher.
Welcome to an environment where nerd knowledge is on point.
Asteroid Factory.
Yeah. Gatorade. Are we going to bury the lead on this one too and not talk about what we're going to talk about later?
No, they'll
it's going to be in the title.
They're going to see in the title. Podcast. So we'll learn that as we go.
You're right.
What are we talking about then?
Picks of the week.
Yeah, let's do picks of the week. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay. Do you want to introduce this one, or do you want me to?
Hey, toe suckers, get ready for three toes. Pick of the week.
That's perfect. So my pick of the week is a story that interweaves the Manson family, Charlie Manson, Sharon Tate, her relationship with Roman Polanski, a stuntman, a ranch that the family lived on, and it ties this all together in a single story. And so, any guesses?
No.
Wait, but can we just hit rewind for a second? Did you just call him Charlie Manson?
Yeah, oh, Chuck. Sorry, my buddy Chuck.
You just made him a friendlier dude. Yeah, it's Charles Manson.
So,
Charlie Manson.
I didn't hook you and you guys by a little creative wordplay that I am not at all talking about the movie all of our listeners thought. I'm actually talking about a podcast, and it's a podcast that I highly suggest for fans, even periphery fans, of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And that podcast is called You Must Remember Manson. So, again, bearing the lead, we may delve into some Tarantino discussion today. And
wait, so this podcast is
all about
dedicated
that?
To Manson.
Chuck, Charlie.
Yeah.
Chucky boy.
So
Chucky boy Manson.
So the podcast I reference, You Must Remember Manson, is actually just a collection of episodes from a parent podcast that's called You Must Remember This. It's one of the best podcasts out there. It's Karina Longworth, this lady who does a tremendous amount of research on the history of Hollywood, old school history. I'm talking 30s, 40s, 50s. And she will pick up on a subject. She will pick up on a rumor, do an incredible amount of research about it, and then do these really cool history shows on Hollywood. Years ago, she did a series on Manson and Manson in Hollywood. So it really doesn't even center on the murders. It just centers on how the batshit crazy Manson, his family, the events of Sharon Tate. And it turns out that a lot from what's in this podcast are things that Tarantino cherry-picked to include in the periphery. In Reservoir Dogs. Are you okay? Say you're okay. Are you a doctor? So I really suggest this for people who do check out the movie and who do or don't know a lot about the history behind this stuff. It really delves into it. And it's about 12 episodes long. And it, frankly, I don't want to say it's more entertaining than the movie, but it is so crazy, the events of that happened around this and the events around the Sharon Tate murder, that to listen through this is really, there's some insane stuff that happened in relationships, and like one of the lead singers of the Beach Boys was like friends with Manson, and the intertwining there, the intertwining. Remember, it's a very the stuff about Polanski. Like, I mean, Polanski's kind of a well-known
piece of shit.
Oh, when you hear like some of the details,
no, I'm good.
This guy is dog shit central. So it's a great podcast series to get hooked into. But this particular sequence, which they, like I said, they pulled out and made their own. Really good stuff. Yeah.
I think we'll probably refer back to your pick when we're talking about our topic of the week, I think, a little bit.
I have no doubts.
Yeah.
Awesome. So that's what I got.
I'm excited to listen to that because you told me about it right after I had seen the movie. So
she does such a good job of the telling of this. Like, she puts you in the scene.
Yeah.
Like she holds, like, the murder isn't even like the mainstay, because right now you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a true crime murder podcast.
Yeah. About Chucky Manson.
That's what it's become. But this one is really just more about the arc of all of these different characters in that time. And it's bonkers.
I'm with you. We'll get more into it. But one thing a Tarantino movie always does is it makes you want to research the topics, the music.
Yeah. I ended up reading an article about Sharon Tate.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Because of Margot Robbie.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. Wait. You know what? I have a bunch of new sound effects. Can you say... Can you say the name Margot Robbie again?
Margot Robbie.
Oh, yeah.
All right, you know what, guys? I got to go. It's been a good run. I had fun.
And you got to give me access to that.
No.
I need the new soundboard. I'm just saying. For the future, I definitely... Mm-hmm.
We're going to break a finger.
I'll hold back.
We're going to use some of these for Tarantino. I guarantee you. Yeah. Do you want to go next? Here, I'll go next.
Okay.
Do you want to introduce it? Here we go.
I can't stop looking at Chewie's shirt.
Oh, jeez.
But just, I have to tell, there is Mickey Mouse holding a phallic item shooting white shit at Pluto's face, and it is mesmerizing. What is he doing to dog?
Wait, did you see it? Is that intentional?
I don't know.
He's cleaning him.
He's lubing the dog up, man.
He's spraying him with perfume.
And look, we've all lubed the dog up once or twice, but...
So the irony around this is that, like, the history of Disney animation, there's multiple times where people have found that freeze frame of some
sex
fucked
in the
up
clouds.
Scene. Sex in the clouds, yeah. Things like that. The penis towers on the Little Mermaid's castle. And
just dick.
No, I can't not see that the old school perfume sprayer.
It's got a dick head, three
has
toes.
A dick head that is shooting out a white.
And Pluto's not liking it.
No, he's not.
Jeez.
Hashtag.
This really works for a podcast,
too,
because no one can see the picture, the T-shirt. You know what? I'm sending that
into Hollywood Babylon. Kevin and they get like things that are inappropriate. Because I can't unsee that anymore. Yeah.
You're welcome.
I will take a picture of the T-shirt. We'll post it to our Instagram.
Do it,
and then you can share it with on Twitter and tag Garmin.
There you go. Look how easy it is to contact. And there's pubic hair in the brush. What the fuck are we?
Okay.
All right.
You did not introduce me yet.
Let's do it again.
Here we go.
Let's do it again.
Okay. You got to make you a Hanzo steel sword? No, Chewy.
Okay, here I am. My pick of the week is something that we talked about maybe episode 3 or 4 of this cast, and it's the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
I picked one up.
Just like a Mario.
Hey. That's a spicy meatball. Hashtag racist.
We talked about Amazon days. Was it called Amazon Days?
Prime Days.
We talked about Prime Days having a good deal. They didn't have a great deal. It was a deal where if you bought it, you got a $30 credit that you could use towards like a game or whatever. I did it anyway just because for some reason, like, the train had left the station.
Hashtag
I'm like,
capitalism. Why not, though? $30.
Yeah. So I did it. Got it at the house. I think I downloaded a Sonic game that was highly rated, which is awesome. And I also downloaded...
Buy an old Nintendo's or an old Sega?
All I've downloaded is 8-bit games for it. No, but I also got the Mario Wii U for it, which is amazing. Here's why it's my pick. And it's my pick because there's something that is otherworldly advanced past the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox about it. And I think it's just the direction that it's going in terms of ease of use and connectivity and the fact that I could hand those controllers to my toddler and the fact that my wife sat down and played with me. Like, that doesn't exist with the PS4 that's in my house. The PS4 is solely for me. And I can maybe... have my wife play a game here or there, but it's never going to get its claws into her. And this becomes something for the whole family. And there's something next level about it.
The Switch is the Wii all over again. It is a perfect storm. Yeah. It takes...
Is the controller pretty easy? It's not too bad. Because that's... I mean, the Wii.
Yeah, it's... if you get the professional controller, which is like $80...
Right.
Yeah.
Just... brutal, but it's like a PlayStation controller.
No, so I'm not sure if you know it. So you take the controllers off the sides. And I handed one to my daughter and one to my son, and it just becomes a little tiny Nintendo controller.
Perfect for tiny hands.
Just a directional pad and two buttons. That's all it is.
Awesome.
Like an old school Nintendo controller.
Oh, that's great.
Tiny, but...
Dude, I'm still rocking a Wii in my house. Yeah. Also, a Wii U.
A Wii U.
Truth be told, has never been plugged in.
Yeah.
But it was beautiful to have that after you guys like shit on it for like 10 minutes. That was awesome.
But yeah, that's my pick.
So, and the games that you're playing on it, you're liking the gameplay? It's
liking the gameplay. I'm looking forward to getting like a AAA Switch-only game. I was really thinking about getting that Marvel Alliance game. Because Doom, I know, has been playing it. Have you still been playing it?
I just beat it this morning.
Well, I believe we're foreshadowing, right?
No.
Don't you beat it every day?
Like, it owes me money.
It's been a while since we had
Helen. We haven't heard Helen in a long time.
Right?
Love you, Helen.
Yeah.
There she enough! Is.
She likes the masturbation here. It's a little weird.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's my pick.
Nice.
Awesome.
Cool. Let's introduce you, right?
My pick.
Here we go. Oh, sorry about that.
It's not that bad. What the fuck?
Do you want to do him?
Sure. I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
And now, Doom's pick of the week.
Yeah, so piggybacking off of that, my pick of the week is, I know it was weird. I think episode 4, I did like a preemptive, like, I think it's going to be in the future Ultimate Alliance 3. And that is my pick of the week this week. It is just a fun game. It's a lot of people were saying that the, I read some articles, I think it got overall pretty good reviews, but Team Ninja did it, who are known for making more challenging games. Yeah. And I'm like, there's like the game starts and you get two choices, you know, like easy or medium. They're like, oh, if you played this game before, play medium. I did medium and I got my dick bent. It was fucking brutal.
I'm gonna say you're playing it wrong.
No, that's the thing. I mean, people are like, oh, the combat's too simplified. This is made for children. Look, if a 4-year-old kid can beat this game on medium, I'm gonna, you know, enroll him into the
Ninja School
esports, you know, Fortnite team. Like, it's brutally hard, but it was fun, and it was, they tell a really, you know, pretty unique story, and it's, they do a great job. And a lot of people were giving shit about the new Avengers game that they for E3,
the preview?
Square Enix one.
Yeah,
Square
Enix.
Chewy knows. They were mad that it looks like the MCU, but it doesn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember all the backlash, which was psychotic, because that game looks like a blast. And it's hard to do a good video game from a movie.
True.
There but is, what was their complaint? There was a small point there about, like, everything looks like the MCU except for, like, the faces.
Right.
It's like that looks like Chris Evans, Captain America. However, it's a different actor playing him.
Type of thing. I'm sure that's by design because they didn't want to pay him royalties. Exactly.
Yeah. When in actuality, people like said, if you're going to do that, then like redesign the
do different characters.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This game does it perfectly. Okay. It is comics and the MCU mashed into one, and it's perfect.
Okay.
Like Thanos is him and his group of dudes and two females. They are all comics.
Okay.
They didn't touch the MCU part of that. But like everyone else, Star-Lord, Groot, Rocket, those are all MCU characters. But they do a great job. They set all the areas you go, Wakanda, you go to nowhere, all the places basically from the movies.
Yeah, going home and watching the movie tonight.
But it's very well done. And it's just fun to goof around and you know, on easy, I'll admit it. But yeah, I absolutely recommend it for anyone. And you'll have fun playing it with your kids.
I mean, how many hours of gameplay?
That's the thing I was thinking about. I feel like it was quicker. I feel 12? Like...
Oh. I heard it was 7 or 8.
I was thinking 8 hours.
What?
Yeah.
So, okay, what? Let's do the math for me. That would be about 75.
Yeah.
So Thanos and his crew were taken straight out of the comic books. I mean, like, so nothing out of the MCU with Thanos and his crew?
No.
So it wasn't like the children of Thanos? It was the same characters?
It's the Black Order, and they are all there, but they're all their comic versions. Like, complete, and there's a second female that they didn't put into the MCU, and I'm not 100% sure why, but she is in the game.
Yeah.
Is Maul there? Because
you only need...
his name. Maul? Is he in there?
Ebony Maw, yes, he is.
Ah, my Maw.
Yeah, it's cool. Good game. I mean, overall, I would probably give it, like, a B+. Great graphics, and to bounce off of Chewie, the Switch is such a pleasure to play. The power button, there's no startup. The game is always on. It's so easy to... save. You don't have to worry about anything. The PlayStation, I plugged it in today, and it was like a 13-minute startup.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you get spoiled. Really. But yeah, it's a good system.
That's awesome. Have an update.
Always
have an update.
I tried to play Overwatch yesterday. It was like a 45-minute update. I'm like, well, I'm going to go to bed.
Right.
All I had was 45 minutes.
I know.
Right. Yeah. That's your time period.
God, I felt old.
Yeah. So it's just second to Wii U?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. You know what? Maybe third. We'll put the... what was it? Sega Saturn. Yeah. Whoa. Wii U, Sega Saturn.
I heard great things about the Saturn.
I know.
Saturn.
I just picked an obscure one.
I got a Sega
one.
CD somewhere. That might still
That's
be working.
A thing?
It's a thing.
Well, they're all better than Atari.
I think I still have a Dreamcast package somewhere in a box.
Dreamcast was
I never owned
shit.
A Dreamcast.
Dreamcast was like very highly rated.
It was.
It was. And it had like 3 games.
But they were fucking great games.
Yeah, they're awesome games.
Giddy up.
Yeah. Let's get into the main topic.
Bruce Lee.
What is the...
you're going to stir the shit up right away. You already know all the controversy.
What? There's controversy about that?
You do not.
You don't know?
You didn't make that reference because of that?
Please go on.
All right, we won't get spoilery, but it's not really that spoilery because it's from the preview.
Do you want to... you want to just introduce us to what the topic is?
Yeah. So I think tonight our topic is not specific, although we'll dance around the specificity of it, but we're going to be talking about the universe of Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Nespa.
And kind of this will be spoiler free regards to
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
because two of us at this table have seen it and one of us have not.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Yeah. But we'll probably talk about it because it's we being Chewy and myself, Three Toes, have had weirdly similar experiences with the new movie.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a tricky one.
Can I just say that I have talked to, let's ballpark it, 20 people.
Yep.
You two might be the biggest QT fans I personally know.
100%.
And your reviews are the worst. And they're not bad.
Right.
But they're the worst. Everyone who's not a QT fan said it's his best film.
I think that might be the... Maybe that makes sense.
Yeah, like we have someone that we work with who loved the movie. Yes. And I saw him before I saw it, and he's like, dude, I saw it. I loved it. I'm like, you're a hard critic. Like, and he's known for being a very hard critic on movies. So that actually kind of made me not excited. That actually kind of drove my excitement down a bit because I was like, wait a second, what am I getting myself into? Yep. Not to say that I don't respect his reviews, because I do, but it's,
sometimes.
So for me, I had the weirdest experience with this movie that I've had with, I think, any in a very long time. There's no question my excitement level was over the top, and my expectations were over the top, and that's always a dangerous thing to go into a movie with, but it's Tarantino, so that's fine. Those cards are fine on the table. As a matter of fact, when we were talking three episodes ago, that's the number one movie I've been looking forward to this year.
You were diamond tipped for that one.
Absolutely.
Man. I don't think your manhood could have gotten harder.
Oh, exactly. And coming away from it, so at the end of the day, there's a picture of a dick on the table, ladies and gentlemen.
Can we post this to Instagram?
Probably.
I want to.
It's pretty good.
So, what's his name, Stanley? Love you, Stanley.
So coming away, this movie, and to Doom, to your point, this movie is a great movie. As a movie, this movie is a great, great movie.
Yeah.
It is absolutely an A. I don't know if it's an A+, but it is an A.
Did you give it an A? I thought it was a B.
I gave it a B to B minus when I came out. I probably pushed it a B to B plus, but I give it a B to a B plus as a Tarantino movie.
Mm.
And so I'm holding him accountable to a different scale of review, ratings, etc. And fucked up thing about that rating is this is probably the most Tarantino movie in concept and design and the least Tarantino movie, in my opinion, in execution, because it plays much more as sort of a straight drama. There's a straight story. There's a lot of different interweaving things, but it doesn't have some of those signature things that I love about Tarantino. Something about segregating the storytelling, really crisp dialogue. This one just kind of meanders. And so it is the movie he wanted to make. It is very much his life, his love of movies. But coming back to it, the amount of rewatchability for me, which for Tarantino in general is nonstop, I'll rewatch it, but I don't know how much I'm looking forward to rewatching it.
Yeah. You've said pretty much everything I want to say.
Okay.
Moving on.
Yeah. I want to tell my story about Tarantino, but can you, or you tell your, like, what's your history with him in terms of, like...
So, history with Tarantino is, and it's a beautiful one, is Pulp Fiction before it broke as an international, like, knock your pants off type of movie.
You went to the theater in 1994?
Yes, sir.
Holy shit!
I saw Pulp Fiction on the art house circuit. So, it was at the Three Penny in Chicago, which was an art house theater, on the suggestion of a best friend's sister lived in California. It started to make the waves through there. She's like, if this movie hits Chicago, you guys got to see it. So we saw it, and it's the classic. I was into this band before anybody was. It's a nerd bragging rights. But we literally saw it right before it kind of blew up into the zeitgeist of the world. So it hit, and even back then, and Chewie, you and I talk about this a lot, my brain was hardwired into, I want to know everything about who made this. Turns out at the time, Tarantino hadn't done anything with the exception of Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction was his second film?
Yeah. Second movie.
Movie. He did a kind of a student film called like Happy Birthday to Friends, something like that, before he did Dogs, but it was really just sort of a experimental thing. So I went back and caught Dogs, and that changed the game for me. That movie changed the game for me. There's like probably 5 to 10 moments in my movie watching history that I can look back to and be like, everything is different after this. And movies like The Matrix, Raiders of the Lost Ark, for me, Blues Brothers. Those are the like the moments change from that moment. And for me, Pulp Fiction, everything was different after that because it's like somebody can do this crazy shit. So I was 100% all in at that moment.
Yeah.
And that from there, it's just been pretty much more of the same.
Yeah, I think my story is in high school, right around the same time that I was taking like broadcasting class. So we were learning how to shoot video, edit video, and do all that stuff. Around that same time, our broadcasting teacher showed us Reservoir Dogs in like a back room after school.
Best teacher ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We watched that and we were blown away by it, but I don't really have too many memories about it. But then like we saw Pulp Fiction. I just remember every time I saw a Tarantino film, I walked away from it wanting to be a filmmaker.
Mm.
That was like what happened to me. Like that's what his movies did to me. Fast forward to Jackie Brown. I see Jackie Brown and I loved it. That was my favorite Tarantino movie at the time as well. After I saw that, fast forward to seeing Kill Bill and walking out of Kill Bill Volume 1 with a group of friends where half of my friends hated the experience.
Well, that fuck them
is like, impossible.
Hated it. Like two of them were film students. And they just thought it didn't go anywhere. And they thought like it was just too much fighting for the sake of fighting and all that stuff. But I walked out with one of my other friends and we were just completely blown away by it. And I had that same feeling, but on a different level. Fast forward to Kill Bill 2. I saw that with a buddy, saw it again. And I got addicted to watching that movie in the theater. So much so that I remember I was driving to go meet a friend. And I was driving past Schaumburg, and I looked at the theater. And this is after I'd probably seen Kill Bill 2 maybe four or five times already in the theater. Yep. Saw the theater off the expressway and pictured in my mind that Kill Bill 2 is playing right now in that theater right now. Immediately got off the expressway, called my friend, said I was sick, and went and saw the movie again. Just because I was...
Oh, I fucking love this story.
It was weird. Like it got under my skin in a way that nothing else has before. And we could have a whole cast talking about like each one of these movies. Fast forward past Kill Bill.
Inglourious Basterds?
Nothing really caught me. Like, yep. I left every movie wanting to know more about how he made the movie, the music he used in the movie, the references he made to the movie, all the movies that influenced the movie. But I never wanted to be a filmmaker again after seeing his movies. Mm-hmm. That might be due in part to where I was in life. But I think it's also due in part to, I think Reservoir Dogs through Kill Bill is his like golden age. I think that's like, like Kill Bill is something that's so different and visceral. Like it transcends cinema and he hasn't done that since. It's just been honing his craft in a way that has been like, hey, let me hone my craft into a, World War II, what do you call it? Revisionist history movie.
Yes.
Let me hone my craft into a slave trade movie. Let me hone my craft.
Revisionist history.
Yeah, revisionist history. Let me hone my craft into a stage play on screen, Hateful Eight. Let me hone my craft into, like, so they're all good movies. I've loved all of them, but yeah, I guess I can't really put into words why I haven't been able to connect with his recent stuff as much as I did the golden age. However, I will say that I still give every movie like an A.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah. That's good. Relationship with Tarantino. Talk to me.
Mine started with Pulp Fiction as well. I watched Pulp Fiction with my cousin and I loved it. I thought it was
you
a great film.
You loved the rape.
No. Yeah. In Pulp Fiction?
Yes.
Pawn Shop?
Yeah, I know.
Wait, in Pulp Fiction, you asked that question?
Come on, man. Yeah, no, that scene did fuck me up. I think my story is a little similar, too. So I saw Pulp Fiction first, and then in high school, only the cool kids saw Reservoir Dogs. So
it was a very, it was still underground. I mean, that movie stayed underground-ish, cult-ish for a long time.
For quite a while.
But like at the top, it was like the cream of the cult crop.
Yes.
What year was Reservoir Dogs, you say?
1806.
Oof. Yeah. It couldn't have been that. It had to be like a year or two before Pulp, 1991, I would think. Yeah.
So,
but it feels like it's like early 80s.
It does.
It feels old. Yeah.
So yeah, so that was good. I think Reservoir Dogs became my favorite Tarantino film. I liked Jackie Brown. I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kill Bill happened, and that though both films, I think I do enjoy Kill Bill 1 a little bit better.
Same here. Yeah, same here. But when I say Kill Bill 2 got me, it was just, it was something weird.
It wasn't, yeah.
With where I was in life. And
to me, but that was a change for me for Tarantino. I felt that it was his film, but that was the most Hollywood movie he made up until then. And it, I liked it. I liked that it was a little bit more Hollywood.
It's more approachable.
It's more approachable. And I don't, to Three Toes' point, how could anyone not like that film?
That's,
you don't have to love it.
That is impossible.
And I get that. You might not think that Kill Bill is like the best film of all time, but you can't leave that theater and not enjoy it.
It's a fucking work of art.
I can see someone watching Kill Bill 2 and not enjoying it because it does meander a little bit.
It does. The second one wasn't as crisp.
I don't want to say it ends with a whimper, but it does end.
It's tonally so different
than
Kill Bill 1. And I say this from, so in the OCD of me kicked in this past week, and I just randomly threw on Kill Bill 1. And now, a couple days later, I've burned through Kill Bill 1, 2, and Reservoir Dogs again.
Okay.
So just past couple days, revisited them all.
Yeah.
Kill Bill 2 tonally is interesting because you have the Bud story, which is way more somber. You have the final showdown with Bill, which is so fucking brilliant in every moment that it's going to build to this big moment, and it turns out to pull way back to this just dialogue and the scene with the daughter, and even the death of Bill is this crazy twist where it's going to be this big sword. Everything is really just kind of, it's a slow burn. That being said, Kill Bill 1 and 2 are, for me, all-time top. I count them as a one movie.
It's one movie.
Top 10 of all time. Like, it is endlessly rewatchable. Like, I finish it, I'm like, I want to watch it again.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
What's after Inglourious Basterds? Loved it.
Yeah,
it's a great movie. It was the last of the greats for me. I know you said Kill Bill was, and I wouldn't put Inglourious Basterds quite at that level as Kill Bill or Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
But I did not enjoy, but I did not connect with Django Unchained at all. And I, to this day, have not seen Hateful Eight. I know.
Bananas. Oh, but it's crazy. Although, but for me, and I think I'm in the middle. So for me, Inglourious, when I saw it, and Chewy, I really do like your segregation of the movies into kind of groups.
Yeah.
Inglourious, when I saw it, I was like, oh, I liked it. It was good. It's a great Tarantino movie. But I was like, but it wasn't great. It took me like a couple of different viewings. Now, I started to bump it almost into the batch with Kill Bill because it has two or three moments in there which are
the
greatest of all time. Like, the opening is one of the greatest all time Tarantino moment.
It might be one of the greatest intro scenes in any movie ever.
And it's the tension in that scene is palpable. Yes. And then the scene in the bar in midway through is such a great scene. But it's not just a collection of scenes. Once I kind of stood back and allowed myself to get into the main storyline and some of the more traditional drama and the challenge of her getting in with the Nazis. The movie itself, it took me a while to kind of connect. But weirdly, Django is one that I liked a lot, but I have not revisited enough. Yeah. And maybe that's going to grow into that.
Maybe I need to. Maybe I need to. Because Leo, I remember in that one, was amazing.
Everybody's great. Yeah. It just
in some of the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood stuff I've been watching on YouTube, they cut to scenes of Leo in Django just because they're promoting him in Once Upon a Time, and the zoom ins on his face where he's like laughing or he's like looking almost directly at the camera with like his drink and like his like cigarette in a cigarette holder. I was laughing out loud. Just he's such an amazing actor.
He's and I wanted to go on the record here. He deserves a fucking Oscar for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
You think so?
100%.
I think so too. But
his range in this movie, because he plays a character that he doesn't normally play because he's kind of schlubby on the downward spiral of a so-so career. And his sadness, his frustration, his kind of lostness, and what he evokes through his eyes and through, like, it's more than just crying in a scene, which I'm always impressed with, but it is just this like fucking anger and frustration, and you can just see he's losing it when he's just doing kind of a bit part on a pilot. Fucking, he'd give him an Oscar. I mean, Pitt's character is wonderful. Pitt's character, Cliff, is you like this guy, he's great, but it's a pretty easy character for him to play. He's a pretty looking guy, and he just plays like a cool guy. But fucking Leo,
because he is a cool guy.
Owens, he's a great guy.
God, yeah,
I'm Team Pitt.
Yeah, for sure. We said this was going to be spoiler free, right?
It is.
Okay.
For reals, though, you motherfuckers. Bruce Lee, please spill the beans. I've been.
No, there's, want, and there's nothing.
Do you want us to break that down for you? I mean, like, do you want spoilers? There's
controversy.
But no, let me tell you what's the problem.
Because you have to spoil
Bruce.
It a little bit.
So the problem with the Bruce Lee scene for me is that the trailer for this movie, it showed a lot from that scene. And it's a funny scene. It's it's the first scene in the movie, and it's like probably an hour and a half in that I was
that's
like, it's
the
like a
first scene.
No, it's the first scene in the movie that's like a funny scene, and it's kind of like even the theater is like all like, oh, because we got like a cool scene. Because up until then, it's kind of it doesn't meander, but it just sort
it
of
gets
builds.
Kill Bill for like a very short amount of time for a second.
But the scene is great. But the scene, and we don't need to give too much details. But within it, there's the stuntman played by Pitt Cliff.
All right, Kato. Let's try that again.
Where he fights Bruce Lee. And Bruce Lee comes off in the scene is portrayed as kind of cocky, and there's a fight, and they trade blows, and Bruce Lee doesn't own the fight. I'm not going to say who wins and how it ends up. It's a very funny scene. It's very well done.
It's an awesome scene.
The trailer alone where they reveal the line of where Bruce Lee says, if I fight you and kill you or hurt you, I go to jail for manslaughter. Yeah. So it's like, anybody does that in a fight, they go to jail for manslaughter. It's called manslaughter. So I murdered the quote, but it's a funny scene. It's great. The reason it's getting so much blowback is Bruce is portrayed as overly cocky and overly confident and doesn't just own the fight. And so people
and human.
Are,
he's being portrayed as human.
So people, including his family, are like, fuck you, Tarantino, for shitting on his legacy. I don't personally see that way. I've watched a lot of things.
I feel like if Bruce Lee wasn't cocky, I think that's bullshit.
Right.
He should have been cocky.
And he was in real life. He was notoriously cocky. And
how could you not be? You're fucking Bruce Lee.
So this is a way we could say it without spoiling it. And that is no one wins the fight. We'll just say no one wins the fight.
I mean, he kills Bruce
Lee. That's how we'll say this without spoiling it.
Pitt kills Bruce Lee?
Slits his throat.
Holy shit.
With a pencil. Meet a pencil. Hashtag John Wick 4.
And then cuts his ear off.
Right.
Stuck in the middle of
don't
the
know
baby.
Why I've been here tonight. I'm feeling I just ain't right.
So I think I have a way to say this without spoiling it.
I'm so scared.
And we need to preface this with no one wins fight.
Or do they?
So Brad Pitt wins the fight. We get it.
No. I'm going to say no one wins the fight.
No one does, but the people that are complaining think he does, but he doesn't.
Yeah. His estate doesn't like how he is bested at times by Pitt's character. And when Tarantino came out and said, did you read Tarantino's quote?
A bit.
He said that if Bruce Lee had met, first of all, he said, it's not Brad Pitt.
It's a character.
It's a fictional character that's created who in the movie you learn is maybe a sociopathic psychopath. Like it gets like dark. Yeah.
Fucking Manson family.
Yeah. No. So his estate doesn't like the fact that he's bested at all.
Bruce Lee's portrayed a little bit like an ass. And he was and could be in cocky situations perceived that way. The other problem with this is Tarantino does not present history as history.
No,
Tarantino presents,
ever.
He presents history as bits and pieces. A lot of what he put in this movie is straight out, and again, back to the podcast, which is a history-based podcast, is cherry-picked and spot-on from the way it was. A lot is, but a lot is not. And so he has a fun license with history.
Oh, yeah.
Including the inclusion of Bruce Lee, and the guy who played Bruce Lee was amazing.
Yeah. So. His quote goes on to say, if Bruce Lee met Brad Pitt's character in an octagon.
Correct.
Brad Pitt's character would lose. If Bruce Lee met Brad Pitt's character in the jungles of
Vietnam,
Brad Pitt's character would win. But this goes on to this idea, and you gave me a Mad magazine.
Yep.
That is actually very meta. It's actually in the movie.
Ah, it's my fave.
And I'm going to see if I can make a point here. Mad magazine's a satire.
Correct.
This movie is a satire. The name of the movie is Once Upon a Time, which dictates that this movie is fantasy.
It's a fairy tale.
In a fairy tale.
Yes.
So I understand that Bruce Lee's camp wants to defend his honor. And here's the thing. They need to. They actually should. They need to. His daughter needs to come out and say, that's not my father. That's not how
he was. And they do, because he was portrayed a little dickish. So that's fine. Yeah. It's totally their wherewithal to do.
Yeah. And they need to do that because this is a great opportunity for them to get Bruce Lee's name out there more.
Yes. And once again, Tarantino does it even for a deceased actor. He's bringing people to the forefront because, you know, Bruce Lee's name and image will become more because of this movie. Yeah. So.
You know, that's something that you haven't seen in a Tarantino movie recently. He hasn't taken someone on the outskirts of Hollywood or someone that has fallen and picked them up again since Kill Bill did it. And did Inglourious Bastards do it?
He had a lot
I think
of
once he got past Kill Bill, I think he was kind of done with, hey,
with
let
that,
me,
with that yeah. move. I mean, yeah. he had a certain, this one, Luke Perry.
Okay.
So he brought him into it. Who you could argue would be kind of like a Travolta type of character because he was really popular back in the day.
Yeah.
He originally was going to have Smokey and the Bandit.
Burt Reynolds?
Oh, Burt Reynolds was in it, yeah.
Was supposed to be, but then passed away.
He was supposed to be in it, did a first rehearsal, and then passed away.
Replaced by Bruce Dern, well cast, and that scene. So again, we're not going to get into spoilers, but the scene on the Spawn Ranch, the Manson family ranch, is a really, really good tense scene.
It's an amazing scene.
It's an amazing,
very much akin to the first scene of Inglourious Bastards.
Yes,
it's good.
It's a scene where you're like, what the fuck is going on here? I don't like what's happening here. And he keeps going and going, and he does some crazy things with that scene. So there's moments. It's awesome. The movie, awesome, but it. To me, it didn't have that, and it's by design, it didn't have that tight Tarantino dialogue or even that fun dialogue. It's just more of a kind of meandering through Hollywood with these down-and-out actors, actor stuntmen, that intertwines with the Manson stuff. So it's a great movie, but if I had to list my Tarantino's top from top to bottom, he's got 9 flicks out.
Beyond top 5?
His? This one? It would probably be second to the bottom, third to the bottom. And it's because I push so much of the other movies ahead of it from rewatchability.
Yeah. He loves this episode of CSI.
That's it.
Oh.
And his got shot on the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
As Elvis.
So fact. Running out of time here, so let's try to tie a bow on this one. When I got out of the movie, I immediately texted you. And you, one of the things you said was the rewatchability isn't there for this one.
I thought that while watching it, I was like, I don't feel like I'm going to want to rewatch this soon.
Yeah, I felt the same way,
but
stepping away from it and being away from it a little bit.
Yep.
I want to see it again.
Yep.
Almost immediately. Like now I want to see it again.
We have the same, and the deep dive, which you talked about earlier, of like going down that rabbit hole of all the influences. There's a fuck ton of influences and things that tie into this. Like I can't stop digging into it. Yeah. And so I do too. I do give you that.
Yeah. And thanks for that Mad Magazine.
Yeah,
it's creepy. It's
very meta.
It's so creepy.
So the meta-ness of this is in the movie. So one of the guys is this kind of like B-list actor who did a lot of Western TV show stuff and movies. And he was very much into himself, so much so that his Hollywood home has lots of movie posters around of movies.
This one of his things.
It's what I would do. In the background, while he's mixing up like 20 cocktails one night, there's on the walls, all his movie posters, and there's a little framed cover of a fake Mad magazine. I'm a big fan of Mad, always have been. I was like, fuck, that's a cool prop. I would love to own that. Turns out that Mad Magazine, which is still in existence, but literally on its last legs, the most recent issue is that cover.
The last issue, printed issue of Mad Magazine.
That's what most of the rumors are. Mad is kind of denying it, but it seems to be the case, is that they made a parody of a TV show that doesn't exist that's in a Tarantino movie that shows up in the background. So nice. This is...
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, nice. Man, I didn't use this. I was going to use this while we were talking about Once Upon a Time in Mexico or Hollywood or whatever.
Oh, look at you. Yeah, yes. But I said that so many times.
But you should, because so Tarantino and Rodriguez are tight.
Yeah, they oh, yeah. He probably has
use that.
Jeez. They're playing the whole time. We got to re-record this whole cast.
I would have to keep hitting it. It's really small.
Well, I like those sound effects.
Keep it going.
Do you like it?
Oh,
let's take this on out, man.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
You got to see us out on this one.
All right. Well, ladies and gents, thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the Asteroid Factory podcast.
Check out our website, asteroidfactory.com, to find out where you can listen to us. You can listen to us anywhere you can get fine podcasts.
Anywhere.
I hear a lot of people saying that. So fine podcasts. We are a very fine podcast. Leave a message for us. Anywhere. You could leave us a voicemail message on our website, on our anchor site, or hit us up on social media, Instagram, Facebook.
And Twitter.
Twitter.
I just came back from Boston. Twitter.
Yeah. MySpace.
What?
Bandcamp.
That's a thing?
It's all the stuff that's dead.
AOL.com.
Yeah. And put your ankles in it.